Hello, everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics. I'm Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Rob.
Hello.
And Mick.
Hello.
So how's everyone doing today?
I'm melting.
I'm all right, actually.
No, you aren't, Mick. No one's all right today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, slightly depressed about the...
Don't go there, Mick. Don't do this to yourself.
About the smartly dressed baboon that we've put in number 10, but...
We didn't, though. We had nothing to do with it.
I'm thinking of that old adage that, you know, evil men triumph while good men do nothing.
But luckily, we're not just going to sit here and do nothing.
Yep.
Aren't we?
No, we're going to talk about San Diego Comic-Con.
Because if there's anywhere we'd rather be right now, it was there.
To be fair, anywhere we'd rather be at any point.
I severely disagree. I'm dying when it's 27 degrees. Can you imagine San Diego?
Yeah, but
it'd be an air-conditioned conference hall.
I was about to say that as well.
Packed with literally 90 billion people.
No, 90.
It would have been filled with fans, not just ordinary fans. They'd have been Wonder fans, wouldn't they, Rob?
Yes, they would have. But we're not going to go there right now. See, I just want Andrew to bear in mind that even though they're 90 billion people, they're also 90 billion people like us.
Look, we've all been young. We've all made mistakes. Sometimes that mistake's an earring. Sometimes it's smoking. Sometimes it's buying a Wonder Man action figure because he had a cool flying bike.
See, I tried moving on. I tried not bringing it up, but you insist on bringing it up. So, oh, well. I guess we have to go there.
We could call him Wonder Fandrew. Unless, of course, we're being super friendly and then we call him Wonder Fandy.
So anyway, continuing on with this, the final episode of 4Panel, it was San Diego Comic-Con over the weekend.
Yes.
Or I guess the weekend before, by the time this comes out. And... ton of stuff got announced there, so I thought we could just run through some of it.
Yes. Please don't mention cats.
I mean, I wasn't going to.
Thank you.
No. Right.
As long as we're not talking about cats, I'm fine talking about anything else.
Let's stop talking about
basically
cats.
The only person who's mentioning them is you.
Hang on. Have I fallen into Andrew's trap?
Yes.
Right, okay. Backing away slowly.
But Jason Derulo, though.
Yeah. No, move on.
Yeah. So, San Diego Comic-Con, good, safe. No horrifying CGI monstrosities can get us here.
What?
Have you not seen the trailer for Cats, Mick?
I have seen the trailer for Cats, but I'm resolutely not talking about it.
But would you like to talk about DC instead?
Yes.
So, yeah. So, DC, they had a handful of announcements. First of all, the news that Titans, Young Justice, and Doom Patrol are all renewed for a new season, which is good news indeed, especially Doom Patrol.
Yeah. I have to admit, I did enjoy the first season of Titans. Didn't think I would, but I really did. Mick called it...
Yeah, it's a series that grows on you, isn't it?
Mick called it. He was bang on correct with it.
You're welcome. I think you'll find I did the same with Doom Patrol as well.
Yes, you did.
Which, of course, none of us have seen because it's still not been released in this country. Wink.
I know, but I used my air miles to travel ahead and watch it.
Anyway, then we also got another trailer for the Watchmen series that's happening. And I'm kind of warm to that series now.
Have they announced a release date for it?
I am not sure. I will double check. They have announced a release date of 2019.
Oh, goody.
Oh, I love it when they're that precise.
Yep.
But yeah, looks interesting. Kind of seems to be set after the events of the comic in the kind of modern day, and is dealing with like a war between the police and a vigilante organization who take after Rorschach. Also, Jeremy Irons is playing an old man version of Ozymandias, which is some good casting.
That is some very good casting.
Also, the tease that Dr. Manhattan might show up.
Is he going to be wearing trunks this time?
Oh, he better not be. I want the neon elephant back in its full glory. Anyway, speaking of... I mean, I feel like I've lowered the tone to the point where I may as well mention as well that they had a trailer for the Harley Quinn animated show.
Yes.
Which I very much seems just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Just, it looks like it's leaning a bit too hard in the... Look, we're an adult show and all our characters say the F word.
That's the problem with... See, DC have got a really good pedigree when it comes to animated shows, or historically they've had a really good pedigree when it comes to animated series and movies. I think we all agree, animated series and animated movies, DC have basically wiped the floor with Marvel.
Oh, definitely.
But lately it seems like, I don't know, they seem a bit too hell-bent on catering to what the internet wants instead of what they want to do, which is why we had Teen Titans Go and Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which, weirdly enough, bizarrely enough, had that end credits thing of the original Teen Titans cartoon characters saying, you know, we're coming back.
I mean, I will admit, Teen Titans Go, I don't like, but does seem to have its audience.
It does. Its audience is generally aimed at a more junior level. They're mainly young kids.
Superheroes for children? I'll not have it.
All I'm saying is, when they did Young Justice, they had the far more mature storylines. Young Justice was actually pushing new ground when it came to actual storytelling for the target audience. And it was really interesting. You know, Young Justice and stuff like Avatar and The Legend of Korra, I'd put them on kind of the same level. They're things that can be enjoyed by any ages.
I still think it's a bit complaining that this TV show for children is for children.
It is a little bit. But I'm allowed to do that. I'm British. We can complain with the best of them.
I guess enjoy it while it lasts.
As long as you've queued to complain first.
That was pretty much it for DC. They didn't seem to announce that much. Anyway, yeah, so hopping over to Marvel, they kicked things off with a bit of comics news, mostly just revealing a bunch of X-Men-related titles, because right now they've kind of gone through a period where they've sort of cancelled all their X-Men books, and they've started two new books called House of X and Powers of X, both written by Jonathan Hickman, and then that's going to spin off into a bunch of new stories, which I'm excited for, because... first issue of House of X came out on today when we are recording and was very good. So I'm excited to see where that's going to go. The big news from this that I was excited by, first of all, is Jonathan Hickman. He is going to, once he's finished these two miniseries, he's going to keep on writing kind of the main X-Men series with Lionel Francis Yu, who is very good at art. And also very exciting, there's going to be a new Excalibur series.
Really?
Yeah, really. Excalibur being the British X-Men team. Probably one of, if not my favourite X-Men comic. This new one is going to be written by Tinny Howard, who's also bringing Death's Head back, so she's like my favourite artist now.
Awesome.
With art by, I said artist and writer, because I was then going to say with art by Marcus Toe. It's so hot, Rob.
I know. Anyway, let's keep motoring on.
Yep, gonna keep motoring on. Marvel film and TV is, I think, where the really big news happened, because they came out and basically revealed kind of all of Phase 4. Phase 4 is what we're up to, isn't it?
Yeah. They've said it's Phase 4, but I keep having the sneaking suspicion that this is just kind of the backbone of Phase 4, and they'll be building stuff around this as well.
Actually, yeah, because I think they mentioned, they revealed a bunch of stuff at SDCC, then also said they're working on a Black Panther 2, Captain Marvel 2, and something with the Fantastic Four.
Which I am looking forward to, finally. I really hope that they get it right this time.
I think you're looking forward to it almost as much as you're looking forward to The Eternals.
Yes.
So yeah, turns out last week's episode was scarily prescient. That movie was
indeed
finally kind of officially announced. It's coming out on November the 6th, 2020, directed by Chloe Zhao, who is a director who I do not know at all.
Yep.
Which might be a running theme in this segment.
Well, they had a bit of a surprise when they did the lineup for Eternals, didn't they?
Yeah, I suppose there were a few surprises. A lot of the cast was kind of... I think we discussed it a bit last week. So you've got Richard Madden from the Game of Thrones and the Sexy Protector Man TV series. He's going to be Icarus.
But he's not going to be team leader, is he?
No, well, I think he's probably going to be the protagonist.
Ah.
But then you've also got Salma Hayek, who, surprisingly, is actually playing Ajak. You know, everyone remembers Ajak, the Eternal with the big hat.
Yep.
So she's going to be... So she's going to be playing him, but I assume he's probably going to be a her for this movie. And that character is going to be the leader of the Eternals.
Yeah.
So I assume replacing Zurus, because he didn't have a big enough hat.
Yep. Angelina Jolie isn't going to play Cersei, like we thought.
Yeah, no, it turns out she's actually playing Thena instead.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, okay, whatever. Lauren Ridloff is going to be playing Makkari, and is apparently going to be the first deaf hero in the MCU.
Okay.
Which is interesting, could be cool. But
he should get a team-up with Thunderbolt. Black Bolt, sorry.
Anyway, and finally, Ma Dong-seok, who again is the punchy train man from Train to Busan, is going to be playing Gilgamesh, and he better have his big silly cow helmet.
Ma Dong-seok is playing Gilgamesh?
Yeah.
Because the article I've got says Don Lee.
Oh, yeah, so that's Ma Dong-seok is like his actual name.
Ah, right.
And then Don Lee is like the kind of American name he goes by. Like Richard Pennsylvania.
Okay.
There's never not going to be an episode of 4Panel where I don't sneak in an Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt reference.
Well, actually, no, there probably isn't now, seeing as the internet has killed us.
That's true, now that this is officially the last episode of 4Panel. Eternals is going to be based loosely off the Neil Gaiman mini, which I think makes sense, because the idea of, these characters have existed in the world forever, but then, like, had their memories wiped. I think that works as a way to introduce them and to explain, like, why they haven't been in any of the other films. And it's potentially going to involve a character called the Dreaming Celestial, who's just a big gold dude who kind of stands in the middle of Los Angeles having a nap.
Yep. So what else did Marvel announce then?
Yeah, they also announced the Falcon and Winter Soldier TV series, which is going to be a 6-episode miniseries coming out in the autumn of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It's set after Far From Home, and the big reveal is that Daniel Brühl is coming back as Baron Zemo.
Awesome. Has he got the mask this time?
He does have the mask, but did Rob just say awesome about Baron Zemo?
He did.
Yes, I did.
Rob, noted Baron Zemo hater.
Yes, but the version of Baron Zemo in the MCU is actually quite a respectable version of Baron Zemo. I like the backstory to him. I like his logic for his behavior. It all made sense. Whereas Baron Zemo in the comics does not make a jot of sense whatsoever.
And he has a rubbish top Trumps card.
Oh, God, don't remind me.
No, I do think the audience needs to be periodically reminded that your hatred of Baron Zemo is based entirely on the fact that you hate his top Trumps card.
No, not just any top Trumps card. His top Trumps card from the 1980s. He was literally the single most useless card in the entire deck.
Because he's a Nazi with a purple sock on his face.
There was nothing he could beat anyone in. And if when you look at the top Trumps card, you start questioning Marvel's logic as having him as a supervillain. He couldn't beat anyone even on intelligence.
But yeah, I like the MCU version.
Mm.
I'm glad. Because I mean, his costume is just literally a purple balaclava.
Yeah.
It's easy to do.
Yeah, at least it's not like a flap of whatever with eye holes cut out that Jack Flag wears.
Oh, Jack Flag.
He's got a face cloth. It's like a loincloth, but for his face.
That just doesn't work on any level, does it?
No, it doesn't.
What if there's a gust?
Exactly.
Anyway, next up, we have a property that was announced a little while ago and then kind of we've not heard much from, Shang-Chi.
Yes.
And interesting, the film is going to be Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
So the Mandarin. Which,
it seems like they're finally going to actually follow up on that thread of the Mandarin being about. Anyway, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, it's coming out in February of 2021. Shang-Chi is going to be played by a relatively unknown actor called Simu Liu. And I kind of love the story of him getting the part, because they literally only cast him the Tuesday before SDCC. So it's literally like, yep, you've got the part, now get on a plane and get to San Diego. So I feel like I would just not be prepared in that situation.
Yep.
Just like walking out on the stage for like hundreds of people going, I guess I'm in this movie, apparently.
See, I had a look at Simu Liu, at his acting history, and he was an extra in Pacific Rim, and then his next big movie role is Shang-Chi. But he's had like several TV roles. He's been in shows like Heroes Reborn, and he was in Warehouse 13 as the bartender. He was Mr. Mitchell in Orphan Black.
He's had lots of bit parts, basically. Yeah,
but nothing major.
This is a huge jump.
Yeah, this is like a massive jump for him.
Which, I mean, good on him.
Yeah.
Just as long as he can do that. Because I feel like the action is kind of like the most important part.
Yes.
Because with Shang-Chi, you're really going to need to sell the idea that, like, why do you want to watch a film about a man who's good at punching when there's, like, literal gods and aliens and giant space lasers and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope it's good. I hope it's, like, a fun, kind of Crouching Tiger-esque adventure thing. Also, what's cool, the Mandarin is going to be played by Tony Leung.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he's just a fantastic actor. He was the undercover dude in Hard Boiled. That's the name.
Yep. Tony Leung's a great actor.
I wonder what one of the Mandarin's rings is, just the ability to shoot doves out.
See, that would be amazing. But the thing is, picking Tony Leung as the Mandarin, I think, is just going to work on so many levels, because I've seen him play the role of the bad guy in a couple of things, and he is brilliant.
Yeah, I think you can definitely do that kind of fake, slightly sort of affable evil character.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited. I think it's really cool. Oh, also in my notes is just the word Awkwafina, ?
Awkwafina?
Yeah. She's a rapper, I think.
Never heard of her. I thought Awkwafina was a type of drink.
So did I. But the internet is very excited that she's in this film.
Don't know.
Or maybe it's really extreme product placement.
Oh no, what if this is it?
Yeah.
What if Iron Man's replacement is just like the Gillette Hydro Bot?
Oh.
Anyway, then next up we heard about the Loki TV series, which is coming out on May the 7th, 2021.
Yep.
Didn't find out much about this except for the confirmation that it's going to focus on the version of Loki, kind of from sort of the split universe and Endgame. So, you know, the bit where kind of they go back to 2012 and then Loki ends up stealing the Tesseract and vanishing off. It's going to follow that version of him.
If they're following that version of him and it's going to be a TV series, does that mean they're going to follow the Loki comic? So you could have like Vault Loki and stuff like that?
Maybe.
Because that'd be a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. What I suspect is going to happen is it's going to involve kind of jumping about to like maybe different planets or universes or time zones or something. Because if you look at the logo for the show, it's kind of, it's Loki, but all the letters seem to be like made up of different parts and none of them really match, which I assume is meant to indicate that it's going to like happen across different whatevers.
Possibly, yeah.
Anyway, then next up after that, we've got WandaVision, which that's the name they're going with.
Yeah.
So again, we don't know much about this one, except it's going to be, and I quote, weird.
I've heard a couple of things about this. Aside from what they announced at SDCC, one of the things I heard was that it was going to focus more on Wanda being the Scarlet Witch with all that entails.
Yeah, I'll cycle back around to that, because first of all, I will just mention, apparently it's going to feature appearance by Monica Rambeau, but as an adult.
Yeah.
So it's clearly going to be set in like the present day. She's going to be played by Tiona Paris, who is an actress I don't know. But, I mean, I think at this point it's safe to say that Marvel's pretty damn good at casting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely seems like Marvel are going to be leaning more into, like, Scarlet Witch, like, having these actual kind of magic and reality warping powers. Because aside from this, Elizabeth Olsen is also going to be the female lead in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
It's a brilliant title. Come on.
Such a good title.
It promises so much it can't possibly deliver.
But if it does, it's just going to be brilliant.
Oh yeah, I'm certainly excited to see where this is going to go. It's coming out in May the 7th, 2021. It's going to be directed by Scott Derrickson, who did the first film.
Yeah.
Which I'm a bit more excited about, because I know the first Doctor Strange is kind of everyone's most average MCU film.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of that is just because it's the sort of cookie-cutter origin story. And I liked a lot of the weirder film things that film did.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see kind of it lead more into that. I don't know, Scott Derrickson said he wants to make it more of like a horror film.
Which plays right into Doctor Strange's wheelhouse.
Yeah. I think it also plays into the wheelhouse of Nightmare.
Yes.
The creepy demon Dream King dude, who I know that was originally going to be the villain that Scott Derrickson wanted in the first film. So I think it's a very high chance that he'll end up being the villain in the second. Give me like my weird, trippy Doctor Strange film.
Yeah. Have you noticed? See, I like this, and I don't know if you guys like this as well, but Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, I prefer titles like that.
Yeah, I like that they're leading into like the kind of more comic bookiness of it.
Well, not just the comic bookiness of it. It's like, you know, those pulpy, you know, those B-movies that you had during the 1950s and that.
Yeah, and it works because they're kind of B-movie-esque characters.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's really neat. You know, I would say that makes up for WandaVision.
Yes.
Then, wow, this is... Actually, I shouldn't have listed them like this because we are not segueing from good titles at all. Because next up, we've got Hawkeye. It's a show about Hawkeye, which is why it's called Hawkeye.
Yeah, but given the logo...
Yes. So the logo is very heavily inspired by the Matt Faction and... oh, is it David Ayer?
Yeah.
Yeah, David Ayer run.
If they're doing that...
Well, it has been confirmed that this is going to be about Clint Barton and Kate Bishop. So I think this has the potential to be a very interesting series.
Yes.
So I think that's... I think it's safe to say that Hawkeye is none of our favourite Avengers. But I think he does work better when he's in that kind of mentor-esque role.
Yeah. Well, you saw a bit of it in... Avengers Age of Ultron, in the relationship he had with Quicksilver.
Yeah, and for me, that was probably that and Civil War, kind of the films where Hawkeye works the best.
Yeah.
When he's just like a bit of a dad, and he's just this tired, kind of slightly over the hill guy shooting arrows at robots.
So Mick then?
Yeah, basically Mick.
What?
Quick, we should move on to the next thing before he notices.
Shut up, Wonder Fandy.
You know what? Maybe just pack your things up, Mick.
Yeah.
Your services aren't required anymore.
Yeah, till you realise how much extra work you'll have to do. And then you'll come crawling back.
Does he know about his replacement yet?
Cuddling your Wonder Fan figure as Solace.
Boy. Next week's episode with special guest star Jeremy Renner. You're going to have egg on your face, Mick.
Yes, because I'm sure he'll step up to the plate having heard all your comments about Hawkeye as he researches past episodes of the show.
He's kind of got you there, Andrew.
If there's one thing I could say about Jeremy Renner, which is practically a requirement for being a host on this show, it's that he will in no way listen to any of the episodes we've done.
This is true.
Anyway, Thor, Love and Thunder. Hey,
you don't win an Oscar by not doing your research.
Thor, he's not won an Oscar, has he?
No, I don't think Jeremy
Renner has. Surely not.
I don't think Jeremy Renner has won an Oscar.
Anyway, Thor,
got,
Love and
Thunder. No, he got a nod, though.
Anyway, Thor, Love and Thunder. Or should I say Love and Thunder? Because Taika Waititi's back as the director.
Yes. And it's going to be...
Yep.
It's going to be Jane Foster, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not the only one who's back. Natalie Portman is in news I would not have expected in 1,000 years.
Yep.
Is back as Jane Thor, Jane Foster, and she's going to be Thor. Again, it's so hot.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I thought you were going to do my little pun of Jane Thorster.
Yeah, Jane Thorster.
One thing you'll notice about your puns, Rob, is no one else goes near them.
Andrew almost did. He almost stepped in my pun.
Only because my brain's getting overheated.
So is mine, because that's
happening. Have I worked out the secret of Rob?
My brain overheated, and that sounded a lot better in my head. I'm in a tiny room recording. There's no ventilation.
Anyway, yeah. Obviously, Chris Hemsworth is going to be back, and so is Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie.
Yep.
So that's going to be a phenomenal film. I think we'll move on for now, because I kind of want to do maybe like a separate episode just on that.
There's only like a couple of things left, isn't there, from Marvels?
Yeah, we have got Black Widow, which is coming out May 2020. It's been confirmed that is going to be a prequel, and the Taskmaster is going to be the villain.
But in that, isn't Taskmaster Russian in the Black Widow movie? He's like the Russian Captain America.
No,
well, that's a different character.
Yeah, that's Red Guardian, who is going to be played by David Harbour.
Oh, right, okay.
Unless he's playing, like, not actual Red Guardian, he's just playing, like, a secret agent who's got the same name as the guy who's Red Guardian in the comics.
Okay,
which is also likely.
Sorry, and, it's very hot.
It's so hot. And Florence Pugh is going to be playing Yelena Belova, the other Black Widow. So, yeah, could be interesting. I want to see Black Widow in a movie. I'm just not that psyched for, like, a prequel. All right, then we've just got a couple of things left. The What If animated series is coming. That's going to be cool. Jeffrey Wright is going to be the Watcher. And it's actually going to have like other Marvel stars back to voice their roles. So I think the first one that's been revealed is Hayley Atwell is going to be voicing Peggy Carter in What If She Was Captain America.
See, that'd be interesting. I really want them to do some of the classic What If stories as well. Like some of the ones that you read that I have. What if Jean Grey didn't kill herself at the end of the Phoenix Saga?
What if Silver Surfer took the Infinity Gauntlet?
Yeah.
What if Spider-Man was trapped in a room and it was so hot, so very, very hot?
Yeah. What if the Fantastic Four lost the Trial of Galactus?
Yeah, I think a What If series is going to be really cool.
Yeah, especially animated as well, because they can explore all those stories.
Yeah, that's another episode we can do, kind of our favourite What If stories.
Yes. I vote yes to this.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the end of the Marvel announcement. Everyone's getting up and they're moving off the stage. But oh no, wait, final surprise announcement. Blade remake.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that came out of left field. And the fact that Mahershala Ali is going to be playing Blade. Which is great, because he is fantastic.
Yeah, but not only is he playing Blade, Wesley Snipes is also going to have a part in the movie.
Oh, is it? I didn't know if that was just a rumor.
According to the rumors, as you said, but these rumors have a tendency to have a grain of truth in them.
Nice. But I hope it's not like Wesley Snipes Blade teams up with Mahershala Ali Blade, and then they also recruit like a millennial Blade.
No, I don't think it's going to be that. It might just be that, there might be that Mahershala, how do you pronounce his name?
I pronounce it Mahershala Ali, which may be wrong, because as we've established, we're all terrible at names.
I just call him Mr. Ali.
It's Mahershala Ali. Mahershala Ali, yeah. It might be that he could be like the original Blade, and this might just be a continuation, bringing those three Blade movies into the MCU.
That I would maybe put that the less likely. I'm expecting it to be like some kind of like Django Unchained type scene.
Possibly. We don't know yet. Literally just been announced, so it's all speculation at this point.
Exactly. Yeah, like, literally all we know is this could be a Blade film. The Mahershala Ali is going to be Blade.
Yeah.
That's the end. SDCC is over now.
In terms of the comic book
quietly
stuff...
Quietly melting.
In terms of the comic book stuff, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a bunch of other stuff as well, but that's not comic book related, and so we don't have to talk about it.
Exactly.
But I won't. I refuse. You can't make me, Rob.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'm saying we move on.
Hi, this is Krillin. And this is Usopp. We have very similar voices, except my voice hurts more than this one. And you're listening to The Geek Show.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're literally loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
So, welcome back to this very, very hot edition of Four Panel. I don't mean hot in that way. Stop getting your mind out of the gutter. Mick's going to lead us into the things that we've been reading. So, Mick, take it away.
Okay. I've got a trade paperback called Timeless Tales from Marvel Comics. It's part of their 80-year celebration, and it features a genre-spanning celebration of 80 years of Marvel, a.k.a. Timely Comics. And it is written and drawn by Frank Thierry, Al Ewing, Gil Simone, Margot Martin, Paco Dowling, Carter, Dennis Hopeless Hallam, John Adams, Cullen Bunn, Clay McLeod Chapman, Howard Chaykin, Philip Kennedy Johnson, John Turrilli, David Lapham, Maria Lapham, Jacob Chabot, Gary Brown, Stephen Green, Jibril Morissette-Fan, Roger Antonio, Anna Paolo Martello, Guillermo Sanna, Francesco Manna, Alberto Albuquerque, Luca Pizzari, Stephanie Rene, Chris O'Halloran, Jim Charalampadis, and Lee Luffridge, Tamara Bonvillain, Edgar Delgado, Andre Mosser, Niraj Menon, and Rochelle Rosenberg. Thanks for listening to Four Panel. We'll be back next week. So, Timeless Comics, or Timeless Tales, rather, is a collection spanning some of the non-super genres of Marvel's history. So, we kick off with a couple of horror tales, Crypt of Shadows, and we also have another one. There's so many stories in this, it's difficult to find all the titles. But yes, so there's a couple of horrors. There's some romance stories, some sillies, as I like to call them. Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal comics. A couple of westerns. We've also got some weird sci-fi stuff from the pages of Journey into Unknown Worlds.
Whoa, that's a proper old school sci-fi pulp title,
isn't it? And we've got a couple of old school war comics, including Sving Verboten.
Wow, that is an old school title.
Sving Verboten, and that's from a title called War is Hell. The westerns are called Gunhawks. And the romances are kind of called love romances, which is kind of a bit obvious. But strangely enough, they were amongst my favourites from the collection, because they're not sort of torn from the pages of like a Jackie or Bunty type magazine. They're actual proper comic book titles. The first one is The Widow and the Clockwork Heart, and it's about a service that's rendered by the this guy in a sort of steampunk future, where he operates a dating service that provides a companion that gets you out of your funk if you are widowed or single or whatever. And it gives you just that taste of romance to get you back in the saddle, as it were. And there's a nice little twist to the story as well, of the particular example that it shows. But all the romance stories have that kind of little twist. There's one where you get to make your love last by becoming a robot today, and couples can sign up to have their spirits put into a robot body. And this one starts off with the guy getting put into his robot body, and his missus immediately runs off.
I don't like that.
It's great. And eventually he gets thrown in a waste bin, gets discovered 200 years later in the middle of an alien invasion, ends up sleeping with one of the aliens, and it just goes mental from that point on.
Oh, good, because it's also saying unbelievable. Yeah. What the
way? Exactly. So it then goes mental. There's even a story of good old-fashioned revenge and a sort of twisted balcony romance in a Romeo and Juliet type way that doesn't end quite how you expect it to. Although the ending is a little bit telegraphed on that one. But generally speaking, all of these are typical of... I mean, I grew up reading a lot of horror comics, sort of Tales from the Crypt and stuff. And the thing is, the horror comics here are very typical of that, but that even though they're not superhero comics, they've got a distinctive Marvel stamp on them. You can see that Marvel DNA throughout. The same with the war comics. They're war comics, but you wouldn't have been surprised if Captain America had jumped out of one of the pages. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I would have been. If Captain America had jumped out of one of the pages, I would have been screaming.
You clearly don't get the Marvel Interactive range, then.
No.
Like I do. No.
No. Stayed well clear of that after after I saw what anime did with that sort of thing.
Well, why do you think I read so much Black Widow and Domino? and again, the journey into unknown world, it's that flavour of those early Marvel tales magazines that spawned the likes of the original Human Torch and Submariner. It's an interesting sort of, here's some Marvel comics that don't all start at issue one and don't all feature people in capes with superpowers or mutant abilities. These are just some twisted folks with pasts. And it's a really entertaining read. It's a lovely snapshot. I don't know how many of these titles continued beyond these 80th anniversary samples. There are some variant covers for them that do tie them back into the sort of more familiar Marvel universe. The Gunhawks, for example, has got, you know, that sort of Life of Brian type monolith writing. It spells out Black Panther behind a couple of cowboys riding along with their horses. One of the Love Romances covers has got Spider-Man and MJ. And the Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal comic has the Fantastic Four seemingly trapped in a giant Connect Four board.
Okay.
But the actual content itself stays well away from that superhero genre. It's interesting. I must admit, there is one specific guest star in the Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal funny comic. And you may guess who it might be when I tell you that the title is called Road to Latveria.
Is it Luke Cage when he went to get his money off Doctor Doom?
No. Basically, Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal are a sort of Roger Rabbit-style cartoon duo who've had a falling out and split up. Silly Seal is still making tons of cash. Actually, there's a couple of Marvel guest appearances in. There's a drop-in by Deadpool, another one by Baron Zemo. But basically, the pig's mother is his agent and manages to arrange a gig where they get to go see their biggest fan and put together a reunion show just for him.
He wears a metal mask.
Kang the Conqueror? Iron Man?
He lives in Latveria.
Oh!
Christopher Bernard, son of Doctor Doom.
Yes.
And he has a shrine to Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal.
See,
is it Bob Doom, the brother of Doctor Doom?
No. It is, in fact, Doctor Doom.
I hate to say it, but the way you're describing it right now, it sounds a lot like, you remember Tropic Thunder? The whole thing with, I've forgotten the name of the character. You know, Ben Stiller played that role.
Yeah,
Simple Jack. This is sounding a lot like the Simple Jack thing.
It's not a million miles away. You know, there's characters wandering around in I Heart Latveria t-shirt. There's a beautiful point where Dr. Doom takes Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal to see his shrine, and it turns out it's the wrong shrine. And it's actually a shrine to all Dr. Doom's enemies. Oddly, one of them appears to be a backside that's just framed.
See, this just sounds like a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Oh, it's hilarious.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it then.
The only guest star that seems to actually fit in here normally is Deadpool, really. Deadpool doesn't look out of place dropping into this as a guest star. But, yeah. So that's Timeless Tales, and it says on the flash on the front, don't miss Marvel Comics Timeless Tales, and I would agree with that.
Awesome.
And you didn't.
So what's the rating system now? Is it America's Ass, Nightwing Butts, or are we still doing the Give Me a Grin?
I don't know. I think all rating systems were lost in the inferno.
I think Doctor Doom's book-based enemies. And if you know who these people are...
See, I'd say that was a great title for a podcast, but...
What, book-based enemies?
No, Doctor Doom's book-based enemies. We've already had Doctor Doom's exploding sausage, so... we're keeping the theme going.
I also like the fact that he's got a World's Best Dictator award.
Anyway, shall we move on?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have been reading the second omnibus of Mind MGMT, the Mind Management Comprehensive Report, 2 of 3, Mental Espionage and Its Effect on the Group, including Memoranda on Your Increasing Delusions.
See, I love the fact that the Mind MGMT has that long, complicated title to make it sound as though it's an actual textbook.
I do, yeah, and it really fits in well with this idea of kind of like coded messages and kind of hidden underground spies. So it does set a good tone for the series. And yet this just continues, follows the story set up in Volume 1 of there are now two different groups of ex-Mind MGMT agents, one led by our protagonists Meru and Bill, who are trying to kind of recruit former agents to help them stop the Eraser, a woman with the power to erase minds who wants to set up her own army, do bad things.
I'm glad that we clarified that it's a woman who wants to set up her own army and not the guy who dresses like a pencil and has a pencil eraser on his head, or Arnold Schwarzenegger from the movie The Eraser.
Yes. Anyway, I think the thing with the series is the plot is mostly an excuse. Like, the series seems to be more focused on just kind of this group traveling the world, meeting new agents, and kind of building a bit more of this, you know, intricate world of kind of a Cold War-esque paranoia, but also mixing in all of, like, these wild conspiracy theories. Like, there's a bit where we find out that the main method of communication in Mind MGMT is dreamwalkers, who you can like leave a coded message and they'll read it, and then at night they'll go to sleep and they'll contact you in your dreams and pass along information.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all fun stuff like that. I think one of my favourite bits is right at the start, we get introduced to the Maritoshka program, which is part of, because of course being Cold War based, there is a rival Russian organisation to a I'm just going to call mind management because that's easier.
Yeah.
And one of their kind of agents is to take someone train them up to be a deadly assassin, but then just brainwash them into thinking they're an ordinary citizen. And it goes through this whole process. Because again, something the series does really good is like have the story, but then in the margins, have like this kind of text going through kind of like a confidential dossier of what the Maritoshka Protocol is, which is basically once the agent is reawakened, they start just basically sowing discord in their community until it tears itself apart. So the woman, this called Megan, kind of sees she does something like she just steals like an item from one of her neighbor's house. And you kind of see how it slowly like grows and grows and snowballs and snowballs. And it's kind of just the paranoia in the neighborhood builds and builds until everyone just kind of snaps and they all murder each other. And it's just like a really good kind of sinister slow build. So I don't know, that series is kind of, I'd say probably, because this omnibus is kind of collecting two volumes. I'd say the first volume is a lot of just, you know, kind of world building and sort of filling in dots with regards to various characters' backstories. Whereas the second volume focuses a lot more on kind of pushing the plot forward. So it ends up being a nice balance.
Cool.
Yeah, it's one of those series where just every detail is like just really fascinating to get into. It's all like the really weird conspiracy theories I like reading about in the real world. But then just, but what if they were true? What if you could like psychically program people to convince them that you could kill them with your bare finger?
Did you ever hear of a game called The Hidden World?
I did not, no.
Because when you said... It was basically an MMO that came out several years ago from, if I remember rightly, it was the Funcom developed it. And they released this, and the trailers that they put out for it really caught everyone's attention, because one of the trailers was all of these conspiracy theories, all of these myths, these legends, stuff like that, and then at the end it just said, they are all true, and then it flashed up with The Hidden World, and the whole idea was that everything that you thought possible, all of the conspiracy theories, all those mad things, they were all actually true, but all taking place just out of sight.
Okay, yeah, that seems very much like the kind of thesis of mind management.
Yeah.
Like, they get really weird with it as well. Like, there's one bit where they basically had, like, a decommissioned hotel that they would send agents to. And, like, that agent's entire job was just sit there for years on end, thinking about a single thing, trying to make it real. And, like, there's one agent whose entire thing was just to sit there for, like, 10 years and think about kind of fictional weapons and how to make them real. After 10 years, they opened up his room because he'd stopped eating his food just to find a big scorch mark on the floor.
Nice. Although it's a bit The Men Who Stare at Goats.
I guess a bit, but yeah, I like the series. Just lots of like little self-contained stories like that, as well as this bigger kind of overarching plot.
This sounds like a lot of fun, and I can't wait to read the first volume, which I will do after I finish reading Moonshadow.
Definitely. I think the only thing is I'm still not a big fan of the art. Still, I think it just looks a bit messy in places. But I will give Matt Kent credit, though. I think he does a good job of making each character look distinctive, so you're never really running into that problem where you're not sure which character is which, except for when it's like it's a deliberate effect.
Cool.
So yeah, that's Mind MGMT. It's a good series.
Awesome. So my turn then. Yes.
Yeah, your turn.
Right. And I'm going to take us out with a bit of Kratos, because, yes, I've got God of War, which apparently on the back, according to this very shiny sticker that is on the back of this is an official licensed product of PlayStation.
Is it?
Yeah.
And if you can't trust a shiny sticker, who can you trust?
This is true. You have all of the stickers, so you should know.
I do have so many stickers.
Anyway, this is written by Chris Roberson, with art by Tony Parker. The cover's by E.M. Gist, colours by Dan Jackson, and letters by John Rosnell. And a foreword by someone who I thought had a cool name, but actually isn't. It's Corey Barlog, who I thought his surname was Balrog. I was going to say, that is just like the best surname, but no, it's not. Shame.
No. It's almost the best surname, but not quite.
Yeah. Anyway, this takes place in the Frozen North, just like the video game God of War, or the new video game of God of War does. So this is after all of the things in and around Sparta and Greece and the Mediterranean have been done and dusted. This is about Kratos and his son, and they're in the north with their mother, and Kratos is trying to control his rage. And he's basically fighting wolves but not killing them day after day after day in an effort to control his rage. And he's managing to do it. He's basically making progress until a couple of trolls turn up and decide to splat one of his furry little friends, at which point he loses his rag, kills the trolls, and then has to start from square one all over again. It is a little bit like, remember the timer that Edward Norton kept in that version of the Hulk?
Oh, yeah, it is like timery, whatever.
Yeah, since an incident. You know, it's a bit like that in that respect. But then after that, Kratos is having difficulty controlling his rage. He's trying to control it. He's walking away from a fight with a bear, but he sees an old man being attacked by a bear, and he decides to attack. And that then leads to this whole plot that's basically taken out of the 13th Warrior. I mean, come on. 13th Warrior may not be a great movie, but I have a soft spot for it. You basically have a bunch of northern barbarians who turn into bears and go around eating people. Where have I heard that before? Oh, it was in the 13th Warrior. So anyway, Kratos has accidentally killed one of their brothers who turned into a bear and was attacking the old man, so they've come for revenge to his house, so he goes to their house to get revenge. And along the way, he stops off and sees a seer who sees more than she lets on, but, you know, she gets killed, so who cares? The art is not bad. It's nice, clean lines, stuff like that. It's suitably action-ish art when it needs to be. But for the most part, it's, you know, everything's nicely defined. Body positions and stuff like that are a bit weird at times, and just the muscles of the characters, just, it's kind of a throwback to, you know, how they used to do muscles during the 80s in comics. Is anyone going to answer?
No.
I refuse.
anyway.
Well, if you're going to back yourself into some kind of 80s corner, we're just going to let you.
Look, all I'm saying is that the way they used to do muscles in comics during the 80s is kind of an updated version of that. It's nowhere near the awfulness of muscle structure during the 90s when Superman and... Well, no, never mind Superman. He's Kryptonian. He's an alien, so who cares? But Batman is definitely human, but still ended up with more muscles than his body would actually have unless he was mutated in some way to have more muscles. So yeah, God of War, it's violent, it's bloody, it's basically everything you want from a God of War comic. Is it gripping? No, it isn't. Not in any way, shape or form. It's too brief a storyline. It's more like a snapshot of, look, this is how Kratos is living right now. And then you put it down and you forget it ever existed because playing the game is so much more fun. So,
but it doesn't matter because it's licensed.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Officially.
I've done loads of video game-based comic books, but I've never seen the shiny silver sticker. And I think the shiny silver sticker is, it's a lot more interesting, the potential that holds in that silver sticker, than the entirety of this God of War comic book. So, yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that it's not interesting at all.
I just hope that the silver sticker isn't some kind of herald of an ancient space god that's going to eat our planet.
Yeah, well, if it is, then I've basically screwed us over, haven't I?
You really have.
I'm sorry, but...
Of all the many reasons why this should be the last episode of Four Panel, planetary destruction was not the one I was counting on.
Well, maybe it should be, given who's in charge of America and Britain now, because they may as well be the same person.
There we go. That's it. Let's just throw our comics off the desk and storm away in a huff.
Oh, I did that about 5 minutes ago.
Or build a fort out of comics.
Probably do that.
I could as well.
I would, but that means moving, and I don't want to move.
Using the single issues as curtains.
I remember when Andrew started building a fort out of the comics that I brought into the office a couple of years back.
I think the idea was just to kind of entomb myself in them.
Yes, and you could have done, couldn't you?
I could have gone out on my terms.
Anyway, that's it for this episode. We'll be back next week when it's our monthly blowout session.
So, and we'll do some comics as well.
Yes, yes, we will.
Oh.
Yes. So, look forward to that. But in the meantime, if you want to catch up with any of our episodes or any of the other shows that are on The Geek Show, you can find them all on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can find them on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, various other podcast providers. You'll find us on all sorts of things. If you're listening through any of those services and they offer and they have the facility for ratings, reviews, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure. If you are visiting our site, then check out our Patreon or our shop. And if you can, show your support. Until next time, then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.